Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Pod 36, Texts, Lies, and Videotape. Tonight, we're on the case in Austin, Texas, the capital of the Lone Star State, known for its booming tech industry and vibrant music scene, became the backdrop for a disturbing mystery when Julie Gonzalez simply vanished without a trace. As her family desperately searched for her, they discovered a series of odd clues that had them fearing the worst. And when police opened an official investigation, they slowly began to piece together a trail of evidence that led them to the same grim conclusion. March 26, 2010. It was a clear afternoon in Austin, Texas. But for the family of Julianne Gonzalez, dark clouds were quickly rolling in. Loved ones were concerned because no one had been able to get in touch with the reliable young mother since early that morning. Julie's Aunt Dora was especially worried. She had been expecting a call about their weekly date.
She was always off on Fridays. So every Friday she would call me.
Sometimes Julie would call just to catch up, but often she wanted to see if her aunt could meet her for lunch. But that Friday, Dora's phone never rang.
I hadn't heard from her by mid-morning, and I was kind of surprised. So I started asking everybody in the family, hey, has anyone talked to Julie? I haven't heard from her.
Making matters worse, multiple calls to Julie had gone unanswered, which was strange and cause for concern.
Tried calling her several times, over and over again.
Her family racked their brains, trying to figure out why Julie wasn't answering her cell. It was extremely out of character for her.
Julie was not like that. She would let you know she was busy, or she would answer the phone and say, can't talk right now, I'm in the middle of something, but she always made it a point to let everybody know where she was or what she was doing.
Julie's mother, Sandra, and sister, Samantha, were also troubled. Julie's mother, Sandra Soto.
Friday morning, I called her. No answer. Friday afternoon, I was calling her. No answer. I left messages, but at the same time, Julie is not the type of person that texts and drives, especially if Layla's in the car.
It was the only plausible explanation, but did little to ease the anxiety her loved ones were feeling. Julie's sister, Samantha Ann Soto Petri.
We were all trying to get a hold of her. She's one of those people that don't like worrying other people. So she would immediately answer us back and let us know, I'm okay. But in this case, that was not happening. And I just felt like something in my gut was telling me something is very wrong.
By sunset, Sandra was getting desperate. She decided to call George, Julie's estranged husband, and the father of her two-year-old daughter, Layla. The couple was separated, but had a shared custody agreement.
I called George's house, and George said, no, Julie's not here, but Layla's here.
And what George said next surprised her.
George said that Julie showed up Friday morning, asked him to keep Layla because she was going away for a few days.
Sandra was confused by his story, and when she asked George where Julie had gone, he claimed that she made a point to not give him any details.
Didn't say where. She just said she had to get away.
Those closest to Julie didn't doubt that the young mother needed some time to herself. She was going to school, working full-time as a pharmacy technician, and raising a toddler as a single mother. But there was still a part that made no sense. If Julie was planning to go out of town, it was highly unlikely she would do so without telling her family.
We are just in constant communication with each other. She would have said something.
Adding to the family's skepticism was the fact that Julie would never just skip town for the weekend and leave her daughter Layla behind.
There's no way.
By 11 o'clock Friday night, Julie's Aunt Dora was ready to report her niece missing.
I called the police that night, but as we were told, oh, she's an adult. She doesn't have to respond to anybody or tell anybody where she is.
Authorities saw little reason to doubt that Julie had gone away for the weekend, especially when they learned that her brand new car was not at her home. Detective Rogelio Sanchez.
There was no evidence that anything was wrong. She's a grown woman. If she wanted to leave, even leave Layla, she could have. She had every right to do so. There was no obligation for her to let anyone know. And there was obviously no obligation for us to find her and force her to come back.
And the investigators seemed to have made the right call on the situation when early on Saturday morning, Julie began sending a barrage of text messages to those closest to her.
She said she was fine, for friends and family not to worry, that this is something she wanted.
Assistant DA Monica Flores.
She said, I'm just tired of all this BS. I just want to be left alone. I'm okay.
The text read like a simple explanation for Julie's hasty getaway.
The context, the way the text read, came as a big surprise to everyone.
For a moment, police and Julie's loved ones could breathe a sigh of relief. Especially after they read the text message to Julie's 13-year-old sister, Samantha. The text from her phone indicated that the young mother was safe and sound.
It was later on that day, she actually texted my phone back. She said, I'm okay, SP. Tell mom and tell the family that I'm okay. She called me by my nickname. So this is really my sister talking to me.
Friends also read posts indicating that Julie had taken an impromptu vacation to clear her mind. Julie's friend, Amanda Hayes.
She was posting on Facebook about being depressed, and so I messaged her. She replied back saying she just had to get away and that she would be back Monday. I mean, everyone needs time to themselves. And I just thought she was stressed and really did just want some time to get away and just, you know, come back refreshed.
But as the texts continued to pour in, it was clear that Julie hadn't found solace wherever she had gone. Even more concerning, she seemed to be slipping farther away from the ones who loved her most. The new man in Julie's life, her boyfriend Aaron, relayed a message that shocked everyone. She had texted him saying she wanted to break up.
I was thrown by that.
Her loved ones told police that Julie was madly in love with him and the relationship was going well.
I was like, what are you talking about, Aaron? She broke up with me. How did she break up with you? In a text. She texted you? I said, so you didn't actually hear her?
It simply didn't make sense. Julie's Aunt Dora was stunned by the story and came up with a dark theory to try to explain all of the messages that the rest of the family had received.
It was not her.
Dora was convinced that someone else had written the text. And despite the fact that authorities and friends were telling her she was wrong, Julie's aunt held strong to her belief.
I could see how that could throw off some people, some of her friends, but those that knew her well, no. It was all a crock. It was all
a diversion. It was all fake. It was not her.
Still, several of Julie's friends and her younger sister thought the communications had been authentic. That left investigators in a difficult position. And Julie's next post on her password-protected MySpace account made launching an official investigation almost impossible.
She posted on MySpace that she had met a web designer named James and that he was from Colorado and that she was very interested in him and wanted to go to Colorado to be with him.
It was stunning. Not only did they have to accept the fact that Julie had picked up and left town, none of those closest to Julie had ever heard her talk about a man named James.
No one at all, not even her close friends.
The story about a new man made no sense to Julie's inner circle. They gathered together to compare notes on the messages that she had sent since she left town.
No one believed that that was Julianne because it was just completely inconsistent with who she was as a mother, as a friend, as a niece, as a daughter.
They ultimately picked up several oddities in the way the texts and posts had been composed.
Because of the way that they were worded, the way that some of the words were abbreviated, she didn't write that way. She didn't post that way. So we knew that it wasn't her.
And there was more. Julie had a job and was a dedicated mother who doted on her little girl.
Julianne loved school, loved life, loved Layla. Every single person talked about how much she loved Layla and loved to spend time with her. She would very rarely leave Layla alone.
She would not have run off with a man without her daughter, or she would not have left her daughter behind, period. She would not have left her family behind, period.
Julie's boyfriend, Aaron, was so convinced that she had not written the breakup messages that he devised a test to prove it. And he shared an alarming story with her family about how that text exchange unfolded.
He was in disbelief because this came out of nowhere for him. And so he began to basically believe that somebody else had Julianne's cell phone. So he asked, "If this is really you, Julianne, what is my middle name?" And the person responded with, "I don't have time to play games."
Those closest to Julie saw the exchange as a confirmation that the young mother had been abducted, or perhaps even worse. But for law enforcement, the emotional story was just another confusing clue. One that lacked anything tangible to act upon.
There was no obvious evidence to show that any foul play had taken place. The text messages, the social media postings were evidence Julie had voluntarily left.
Still, police offered to take a second look at retracing Julie's last known movements, starting with George, Layla's father, and the last person to see her that fateful Friday. They tracked down George to question him.
His concerns seemed legitimate, but his explanation was just not very detailed. There was no specifics other than the fact that Julie just arrived, said she was leaving, asked him to watch Layla, and then left. And then beyond that, there was no other explanation.
Investigators pressed George for more information. Once again, they asked him if Julie had shared any details about her plans and if he had any idea where she could have gone.
According to George, she was reluctant to tell him.
Investigators were puzzled and uncertain about what to do next. On one hand, they had a family that was convinced that Julie had met with foul play. But the evidence suggested that perhaps she had left of her own free will.
It was difficult in the sense of, yes, there's this family who are saying that Julianne would have never left, but there appeared to be no imminent danger. Law enforcement did not believe that there was any foul play involved.
On the Case, the podcast, will continue in a moment. Julie's loved ones launched their own investigation. Julie's Aunt Dora was convinced her niece was in trouble, and she hit the streets on her own, hoping to find the evidence she needed to get investigators involved.
That Saturday, I skipped out on work, and I decided to go looking for any trace of her. I didn't know what I would find.
She ended up driving the route that Julie would have traveled, trying to retrace her niece's footsteps. Dora was driving around the quiet streets of South Austin when something caught her eye.
I just happened to turn and look at the Walgreens, and there was her car sitting there.
Dora was stunned. Why would Julie's brand new car be parked in the store's empty parking lot?
I was excited. I thought, maybe she needed something. I didn't know what to expect. I pulled in and I ran inside, and I'm running up and down the aisles, hoping to see her in that store.
But Dora's happiness was short-lived. There was no sign of her niece anywhere in the pharmacy. Out of desperation, she asked the sales clerk if he had seen a young woman matching Julie's description. His answer only deepened the mystery.
I showed him her picture, and I asked him if he had seen her, and he said, "I don't know, maybe. She looks familiar." I said, "Well, what do you know about that car sitting out there?" He says, "Well, a girl came in earlier and stated that she was having car trouble, so she was going to park her car for a while."
Once again, an explanation that sounded plausible to an outsider made no sense to those closest to Julie. Was it possible that the young woman who the clerk described was Julie? Her aunt didn't think so.
No, because she had just purchased that car like 10 days before, and there was no way. My home was only about a mile and a half away. She would have called or said, "I'm having car trouble. Can you come pick me up?"
Dora's heart sank. She immediately called Julie's mother.
I called Sandra, and Sandra met me up there, and we waited for the police to show up.
And when Sandra got to the scene, she was suddenly hit with a terrifying realization.
We needed to open the trunk.
Dora and Sandra held their breath as the trunk was open.
We needed to make sure that she wasn't in there.
As they slowly opened the trunk, they held their breaths and looked to their faith for help. And their prayers were answered. The trunk was empty.
We were relieved. We were very relieved. But the next question is, okay, where's Julie? Her car's here. Where's Julie? My intuition was saying she's probably somewhere she doesn't want to be, and we need to find her.
Then as Julie's mother examined the rest of the car, she noticed a clue in the back seat that only added to that growing sense of dread. It was a paper bag with her granddaughter's prescription asthma medication.
Why is Layla's medicine still in the car? If she was going to leave Layla with George, why didn't she give George Layla's medicine?
When police arrived, they viewed the discovery of Julie's car differently than her loved ones. Detective Rogelio Sanchez.
The car was parked there. It was locked. There was no damage. There was no obvious evidence to show that foul play was involved. It wasn't parked in any unusual manner. It was parked as if it had been driven there and left there.
But the discovery of Julie's car also raised difficult questions. If Julie had left town to go to Colorado, how had she gotten there? And why would she have left her brand new car behind? Nothing was adding up. And Julie's loved ones were frustrated that the authorities were still refusing to start an investigation. But investigators said if she didn't return to her car by sunrise, a missing persons report would be taken.
They said, well, maybe she'll come back for her car in the morning. We'll just have to wait and see. So Sandra parked on one side and I parked on the other, and we stayed there till the next day.
But Julie never returned.
We called the cops again and we said she didn't show up. So they put that on the report again. We didn't know what to do.
Police were now on the brink of opening an official investigation. Assistant DA Monica Flores.
If you want to start all over, you're going to take your car. It was operational. No reason why Julianne would have left it behind.
The last obstacle to clear was the story of the clerk, who thought Julie had actually come into the store that night and asked to leave her car in the parking lot.
We obtained video of that night from the Walgreens, and we were able to pull up several pictures of women that had entered the store during that time period. And there were a couple of women that fit Julie's description.
While the images captured were blurry, investigators hoped that the quality of the video would be clear enough to identify the young woman in question. Police showed the footage to Julie's loved ones.
They were able to verify that it was not Julie.
Law enforcement now knew they had a serious investigation on their hands, and 2 days of valuable time had already slipped through their fingers. Sergeant John Brooks.
They had a sense of urgency, lots of concern.
Suddenly, the possibility that Julie had met with foul play became very real. And those concerns grew when Julie's boyfriend, Aaron, showed up with a critical new piece of evidence he had found.
The boyfriend, he showed me a note that he had. It was a love letter that he said was written by her and left for him in his bedroom.
It had been written on Friday before Julie left Aaron's home and prior to her meeting with her estranged husband.
The letter itself contradicted all the texts that Aaron received. The letter was about a future with Aaron, marriage, children, how she was so in love with him. There was no mention of anything in the letter contrary to that.
The letter talked about how much she was in love with him, that she couldn't wait for them to marry, that they had a bright future together, that she had never met anyone that made her feel more beautiful. She talked about their future plans. She spent a long time writing this letter just based on the amount of information that she had in there.
Police were convinced that the love letter proved that the texts her family received had not been sent by Julie. As the official investigation ramped up, Julie's family continued their crusade to uncover new evidence. Julie's Aunt Dora came up with a plan.
We need to just splatter her face all over the place and keep it out there. I want people to know that this girl is loved. This girl is missing. This girl is a person. People are looking for her. She's important to us, and she needs to be found.
Julie's loved ones passed out flyers, T-shirts, and even erected a billboard. The young woman may have been missing, but now her face could be seen all over town. Included with her picture was a heartfelt plea from her family, asking for any information regarding Julie's whereabouts.
This is our family member. She needs to come home. She has a child.
She has a mom, she has grandparents, she has family that is looking for her. And that's what's most important is you gotta take care of your family, no matter what.
Meanwhile, investigators looked at Julie's phone records and her social media accounts for a lead. But all of them had suddenly gone quiet.
The texts and the posts were coming out up until the late evening on the 27th. And then that was when her cell phone activity and her social media activity stopped.
No phone calls, text messages, any activity on her MySpace, everything completely stopped.
It appeared any hope of finding Julie was slowly slipping away.
You know that feeling if you're ever walking out in public with a child and you lose them for a minute and you're just like scouring the crowd, searching and searching for this person. You're just constantly freaking out. You're constantly looking for that face that you don't see. That's the feeling.
More on The Case, the podcast, after this. Investigators had launched a full-scale investigation into Julie Gonzalez's disappearance, but they had hit a dead end. Then they received a frantic call from the mother of George Dela Cruz, Julie's estranged husband.
Sorry to bother you, please, but could you please come to my house? I just want to talk to you, please.
The grandmother of Julie's little girl begged investigators to search a shed in the backyard of a home she shared with her son, George.
Can you tell me what it is that you need to show me?
In the back of my yard, I have a storage. It's going to be simple. I find a very, very big hole.
Is there anything in the hole?
I was trying to dig in it, but I don't want to continue.
Why don't you want to continue?
Because I'm just scared.
Detective Rogelio Sanchez.
Her explanation to us was there was a pile of dirt behind the shed that she said obviously came from the hole. She got nervous, and then she called the homicide unit.
It was apparent to police that the frazzled Victoria Dela Cruz suspected that Julie may have been buried in her backyard.
She suspected something and wanted us to go out there and take a look, so we did.
When law enforcement pulled into the Dela Cruz's driveway, they were met by the terrified grandmother. Assistant DA Monica Flores.
She was very emotional. According to one of the detectives, she was having an anxiety attack, so much so that they were concerned for her well-being. She still had dirt on her knees. She asked if they could go back to the trench to continue to dig because she wanted to know what was there.
As investigators studied the hole carefully, everything about its appearance raised red flags. The size and dimensions painted a chilling picture that led to a gruesome theory regarding Julie's whereabouts.
We measured it. The length of it was the approximate length of Julie's height. The width was wide enough to have placed her in it, and deep enough as well. It was a grave as far as I was concerned.
For investigators who had been so mystified by Julie's disappearance, the discovery began to bring things into focus.
Based on Victoria's explanation, I knew that we were close to finding out what really happened to Julie.
But shockingly, police found no evidence in the hole and no sign a body had once been in it. In fact, George Dela Cruz told the officers it was simply an electrical trench. Sergeant John Brooks.
It was about 2 feet deep, 2 feet wide, maybe 4 feet long. He explained it as an attempt to dig a utility access because they were going to turn the shed into a rental unit. That didn't make sense to me.
Police weren't buying his story, and an online check of Julie's bank records revealed several more troubling clues.
Julie's financial records revealed that her debit card had been used the day of her disappearance, on the 26th, in the early afternoon hours, at three different locations.
The purchases were made at a Walmart and a Best Buy in Austin, Texas, several hours after Julie supposedly had left the state on a trip to Colorado. One of them struck investigators as especially odd. Julie had purchased an Xbox points card at Best Buy. The charge on Julie's card immediately raised a red flag. Julie didn't play video games. In fact, she hated them. But her estranged husband, George, was an avid gamer. His video game obsession had been one of the primary reasons he and Julie had split up.
George didn't really work. He would spend most of his day playing Xbox, which was a main issue between him and Julie.
George's mother gave police permission to search their house, and they discovered evidence that confirmed what detectives already suspected. George had been the one using Julie's debit card that afternoon.
We found the items that were purchased at the Walmart. We found some Best Buy receipts, the same Best Buy where there was a financial transaction related to Julie.
Authorities were now confident that Julie had never gone on a trip to Colorado and that the new man in her life, the mysterious James, most likely didn't exist.
Looking at all of Julianne's cell phone records, text messages, she had never made a phone call to Colorado. There was no trace of any connection or ties with Colorado or any person named James for that matter.
It appeared that Julie's inner circle had been right from the beginning. The text messages and social media posts about Julie running away had been sent by someone else. In fact, the only person who ever said Julie had left on her own was now the focus of their investigation, George Delacruz.
All the pieces, all the dots kept coming back to George. There was no doubt in my mind, having reviewed all the evidence, George was the prime suspect.
George had also been the last person to see Julie alive. Authorities were convinced Delacruz was hiding a terrible secret. But now they had to prove it. They started by going to the stores where he used Julie's debit card to make purchases for himself.
We were able to find video inside the Walmart. And in that video, we were able to see George with Layla leaving the Walmart.
But Julie was nowhere in sight. The surveillance video capturing George leaving Walmart with Layla on the day that his wife had gone missing appeared damning. Assistant DA Gary Cobb.
I think that surveillance video at Walmart was a crucial piece of evidence. That tied him in with having a credit card he had never mentioned receiving from Julianne Gonzalez.
Police discovered even more disturbing information when they began looking at Julie's cell phone records, in particular, its GPS location services.
Her phone never left the city of Austin. Everything continued to point to George.
Investigators dug deeper. Wireless expert Jim Cook used George Delacruz's cell phone data to create a timestamp map of the locations he had visited on the day of Julie's disappearance, and then compared them with the path Julie's cell phone had traveled. Wireless expert Jim Cook.
That's when the pieces of the puzzle, if you will, started actually coming together. Julie's phone is actually up in that same location at that same time, indicating that George was in possession of Julie's phone.
And wherever George went, Julianne's cell phone followed him.
It now seemed clear that the barrage of text messages from Julie's phone had actually been sent by her estranged husband. Detectives also found evidence that George had been the one who logged onto Julie's MySpace account to post about her move to Colorado.
George accessed his own MySpace account and Julianne's from the same IP address, minutes apart.
Police also took a look at George's Xbox activity. They believed it provided a time frame when the attack may have taken place.
The thing that was known about George is he was an excessive gamer, and to the point where he was gaming anywhere from 10, 15, 20 hours a day, on a day in and day out basis. With that, and some of the, what they call the IP data that was obtained from doing a forensics examination, we were able to determine when games were played, the location of where the device was when those games and things were played.
But on the day Julie disappeared, that pattern of excessive use changed dramatically.
It just so happens the day that Julie goes missing, between then and his next gaming activity, there's over a 20-hour gap in game. But it never happened before on the records that were provided.
It was a stunning revelation. Detectives were eager to ask George about those time gaps.
My reaction was that he had some explaining to do. What was it that kept you from your game today? What distracted you? We were looking at George's direct involvement in her disappearance.
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. The circumstantial evidence against George Dela Cruz led detectives to a chilling conclusion. Authorities no longer believed that Julie was alive. The case had officially become a homicide investigation. Assistant DA Monica Flores.
When they found that her debit card was last with George, that he was the last person to have seen her, that her cell phone followed George wherever he went, that she left her working car behind at the Walgreens. And there was little to no activity of George being on the Xbox game the day that Julianne disappeared. Julianne did not leave voluntarily.
And those working on the case agreed that the single mother had too many good things in her life to run away. In fact, she was looking forward to her future.
There was no doubt in my mind that she loved Layla so much. No doubt in my mind, after having read that love letter that she wrote to Aaron, how much she was excited about her future with Aaron.
And that future was one that George Dela Cruz was determined to prevent at any cost.
I think George had reached the end of his rope. I think he knew that he was losing Julianne. There was no doubt in my mind that George murdered Julianne.
Still, investigators had to wait to make an arrest. They needed to prove that Julie was actually dead before they could charge George Dela Cruz with her murder.
Julianne never left via landport, seaport, or airport. She never got another driver's license under another name. She she never reestablished credit or used any credit. That was incredibly strong evidence.
And that time-consuming process of compiling that evidence meant a long, tormenting wait for Julie's mother. During those 3 years, she had to share custody of her granddaughter Layla with George Delacruz, the man she feared killed her daughter.
I asked him whenever we would do the child exchange with Layla, George, we don't have to involve the police. Can you please just tell me, is she gonna come back? And he would say, oh yeah, she's gonna come back. When, George? When? Soon.
In her head, Sandra knew he was lying, but her heart wanted her to believe he was telling the truth.
I was hoping. It was hope. It was just all hope.
A hope that was shattered when police arrested George Delacruz on September 13th, 2013.
George, you're under arrest for the murder of Julie Gonzalez, your wife.
For those closest to Julie, it was a confirmation of a truth they had desperately tried to avoid. Julie's sister, Samantha Ann Soto Petri.
I was at school, and my mom called me. And as soon as I heard the words, I actually fainted in the hallway because I was in so much shock.
Prosecutors offered George Delacruz a reduced sentence in exchange for a guilty plea and his cooperation. Assistant DA Gary Cobb.
We offered 50 years if he would tell us how he had disposed of and where he had disposed of Julianne's body.
I know you got questions for me.
You know, my question is, what happened? Two words.
I know.
What happened?
Mm-hmm.
And then my next question would be, where's Julie?
You're trying to make me feel bad for something that I didn't do.
Delacruz chose to take his chances with the jury and pled not guilty. As the trial approached, prosecutors were concerned that their case was far from a slam dunk.
No doubt the fact that we did not have Julianne's body. There was no doubt in my mind that a jury was going to have a difficult time with that. We had to make sure that we showed that there was no proof of life.
We knew that if we didn't have a physical body, we had to build a body of evidence that would be convincing to the jurors.
The trial of George Delacruz opened in April 2015.
Julie's aunt, Margarita Soto.
You could cut the tension with a knife. It was just a very uncomfortable feeling. To sit there in that courtroom with George's family.
George Delacruz never took the stand, nor did he appear to have any remorse. Throughout the proceedings, he was quiet and distant.
He never appeared to be confident. In my mind, occasionally I would glance over. He appeared to be nervous. He appeared to be concerned. I believe because he knew of his own guilt.
On April 22, 2015, the jury reached its verdict.
The jury found the defendant, George Delacruz, guilty.
It's a moment that everyone who was in court that day will never forget.
When the judge read the jury's verdict, George put his head down. There was loud sighs of relief, crying. It was an incredibly emotional courtroom.
George Delacruz was sentenced to life in prison for the murder of his wife, Julianne Gonzalez. It seemed an odd twist of fate to investigators. They believe George Delacruz might have escaped justice if he hadn't outsmarted himself.
It was George Delacruz's web of deceit that he was ultimately ensnared in. It was his attempt to mislead the police that ultimately was his downfall, especially him using her phone to send out messages.
George Delacruz has faced justice in the eyes of the law, but he has not answered critical questions. To this day, he has never taken responsibility for Julie's death. And those closest to the case don't have any expectations that he will suddenly reverse course and admit that he killed her.
George Delacruz does not strike me as the kind of person who will ever admit his involvement in this. I don't think he has enough human decency to do that.
Delacruz's crime has left his daughter Layla without a mother or a father, which is devastating for her family. Julie's aunt, Dora Soto.
It's going to be a tough road for her, and I feel for her. She's the biggest victim in this.
And Julie's mother hopes that one day George Delacruz will show his daughter mercy and finally tell the truth.
I pray for George. I ask Jesus to place compassion in his heart, to speak. But then I accept the reality that he may never talk. But my belief says, never say never.
Without answers, Julie's loved ones will never have peace.
I have a recurring dream that I'm at her funeral and I'm walking up to the casket, but I can't get there. I just fall out. I faint. Even 10 years later, how could someone be so evil and disgusting?
Police and Julie's family hope that George Delacruz will reveal the location of Julie's body, and they pray that one day they'll be able to bring her home and give her a proper burial. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.